Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Oh, I'm so ready for today's show. This is going to be so rich. And if you're a parent or you're a grandparent or you're around any parents or around any kids or grandkids, this one is going to strike a chord for you. You're going to understand why we're talking about this. You probably already know that it's a problem, or maybe you don't. If you're not aware of the fact that this is a problem, perhaps in your own home, that the essence of the problem, the epicenter of the problem, you're probably going to know or recognize the smoke. We just have to get to what's the fire that's causing the smoke in the first place. This is Steve Noble. It's the Steve Noble Show. It is Theology Thursday, as it is every week with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. And today, kid-centered homes. Okay, kid-centered homes. And that's not like a normal Theology Thursday, but it's kind of normal when we've got our buddy Tate Cockrell in here. Tate is an associate professor of counseling, assistant director of the Doctor of Ministry program, a great biblical counselor himself. And how long have you been counseling? And welcome back to the show, by the way, Tate.
Always great to be with you, Steve. I've been counseling for about 25 years.
Do you have any hope left in humanity after counseling?
I do. Believe it or not, I love doing what I do because I get to see life change every single day.
Yeah, just amazing. And Tate's been a blessing to our family personally, so that's not the only reason that he's in here, but it does back up a lot of it. So I can tell you this is somebody that's been a blessing, not only to the show because Tate's been on several times, but to my family and to both of our boys. It's just been a huge blessing. We love some Tate Cockrell. And today, talking about something that we've struggle with this in our own house. I don't know that you struggle with it in yours. You have children as well. I think most of us are going to recognize this problem, but kid-centered homes, when kind of everything's about our kids. But what all are we going to pack into that kind of ugly little box? What does a kid-centered home look like?
Yeah, so this is how I define it, is when we derive the most amount of emotional satisfaction in our lives from having kids in our home. We devote the most amount of resources, the most amount of emotional satisfaction from having kids in our homes. And that goes to how much affection we show them, how little discipline we do with them, how seldom we set boundaries with them, how much we pick up their clothes and do their stuff for them. I mean, all of that goes in to having a kid-centered home. Those become the most important things because we just want our kids to be successful. So everything in life is about them.
Yeah, and so we want them to be successful. But then I think also, like in our own home, parenting consistently over years is tiring and it's frustrating. And so after a while, I get sick and tired of telling them to put their stuff in the dishwasher. So I just do it for them. Or right. If I want to get this done, and I'm a control freak anyway, but if I want something done and it's not getting done, then I just do it. But like school, relationships, we're getting all involved, trying to smooth out everything, trying to make sure they succeed at everything. Everybody gets a trophy, all that kind of stuff. Is that all part of this whole kid-centered parenting world?
Yeah, I think, Steve, honestly, a lot of it really started with just kind of the whole self-esteem movement, which we've talked about on your show before.
Is there an actual start to that? Other than the Garden of Eden.
Well, I mean, in the U.S., around the early to mid-50s, I mean, there were virtually no articles on self-esteem in journals or magazines or anything like that prior to really the late 50s. And so now, you know, we probably have 2,000-plus articles a year that are you know, written on self-esteem. So I think that has a lot to do with it. I mean, when you think about, before the show, I was telling you the stat that there was a study that was done by the Program for International Student Assessment that found American high school students scored 24th out of 29 countries on analytical problem-solving skills, but they scored number one on self-confidence.
Yeah, but you had a punchline to that joke.
I said our kids are dumb and immoral, but they feel really good about it.
I mean, it's just amazing. So we're what, 24th or 25th out of 29?
24 out of 29.
Analytical problem-solving skills.
That's right.
Because we take care of that for them.
That's right.
Yet we're number one on self-esteem.
That's right.
They have an entire family, culture, country, even in some ways, even a church that's just pumping them up and making them feel good and build them up and everything will be fine.
Well, you know, Steve, if you think about it, the scriptures tell us that a child's responsibility in the home is to learn obedience. And it's our responsibility as parents to teach kids obedience. But so many parents, they've really kind of adopted, kind of bought into this kind of secular mindset of, my number one responsibility as a parent is to give my kids good self-esteem. Like, that's the most important thing. Above everything else, help my kid to feel good about themselves. And I'm not saying we want them to feel necessarily bad about themselves, but we come out of the womb feeling pretty good about ourselves. You know, I mean, from birth, we come out of the womb feeling, you know, pretty self-confident and pretty okay and pretty selfish and narcissistic.
Yes,
and
quite. Oh, I always ask people, so how old was your kid when you had to teach them how to be selfish and lie and take things share?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And so I think so much of the kid-centered movement revolves around that, because we think that it's a loving thing to do to indulge our kids. And I think there's just a lot of difference between love and indulgence.
Yeah.
And when we think that giving them everything that they want is what's going to make them happy and what's going to be good for them, it may make them happy in the short term, but it is not going to make them happy in the long term.
And then when you look at how our culture and our generation and the generation above us, but mostly our generation, then we take to the streets, we take to the airwaves, we take to Twitter, Facebook, whatever, complaining about all these snowflakes who can't handle life, who can't handle the realities of this. They're still living in mom and dad's basement. They can't handle the realities that they don't get everything they want. Why can't I start with a $100,000 a year job? And we're looking for somebody to blame.
Yeah.
But doesn't that blame lie mostly with us?
Unfortunately, it does. I mean, I've said this many times. We better be very careful at mocking and, you know, making fun of the generations that are coming, because those six-year-olds didn't buy those participation trophies for themselves.
Right. Yeah.
A parent's the one who went to the store and bought those.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're really the ones that hold the reins on whether or not we're gonna expect obedience and whether or not we're gonna do the loving thing by disciplining. And I'm not saying be harsh,
right,
but just be consistent. You know, I say all the time, you know, my number one job as a parent is to be the primary discipler of my kids. Like, that's my number one job, to be their primary discipler.
Right.
Not the number one make them feel better guy.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes
cheerleader, we say, hey, be the cheerleader for your kids.
Yeah, that's right. But at the end of the day, sometimes, you know what, my kids aren't going to like me.
No, that's, yeah. Oh, really? What a shock. Yeah, and remember, cheerleaders are recruited, sometimes paid. They're put on the sidelines to cheer for their team no matter what. And sometimes what the team needs is not a cheerleader, but a quick, swift kick in the butt. And so that's, you can go too far. You can be too negative. We'll talk about that when we come back.
All my life I've been searching for something. Something never comes, never leads to nothing. Nothing satisfies, but I'm getting closer to the prize at the end of the rope.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, Theology Thursday, with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. And Mr. Tate Cockrell, Dr. Tate Cockrell, is in here today, who is an associate professor of counseling. He's a good friend of the show, a good friend of our family as well. He's been a great blessing to not just the Nobles, but all kinds of people for, what, the last 20 plus years. And how long have you been teaching here at Southeastern?
Be 4 years in June.
That's awesome. But you're still counseling, and you're still doing marriage conferences and all kinds of stuff like that. You're busy.
Yeah. Still travel quite a bit, do marriage and parenting conferences around the country, and then little private practice counseling out of my office here at Southeastern, but spend most of my time teaching.
And what does the Cockrell home look like? Who's there?
So still at home, my wife, Wendy, and I, we've been married 26 years. I have twin boys, Preston and Spencer, who are 16.
Ooh.
And I have a 24-year-old daughter, actually, that got married about a month ago.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, congratulations. Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah,
she's somebody else's problem.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Not that she's a problem. You know what I mean.
That's right.
But twin 16-year-old sons.
That's right.
That's not easy, I would imagine.
It is not easy. It is not easy.
That's one of the reasons I listen to you.
It tests my patience regularly.
I'm sure it does. We're talking today about kid-centered homes. Tate has been dealing with this a lot. There's a lot of evidence out there, anecdotal evidence, and then a lot of just statistical evidence about what's going on. He mentioned in the first segment about a study that showed students, young people here in America, we're like 24th out of 29th in the world for analytical problem-solving skills. But we're number one when it comes to our image of ourselves, of of a healthy self-esteem, which actually is usually an unhealthy self-esteem. But there's another stat you told me about before we started the show, looking at the divorce rates of parents, maybe parents that have come through this kind of a lifestyle.
Yeah, so most recent study that just came out showed that the divorce rates, the fastest growing group of divorcees in the United States are adults over the age of 50. In the last 20 years, 109% increase, so more than double increase in the divorce rate in that population. So how I say that is that basically what's happening among those 50-year-olds is their last child's leaving home, and they look over a bowl of Cheerios one morning with their spouse, and they say, we've devoted our entire existence for the last 20-some-odd years into our kids. We have nothing in common. We have no reason to stay married. And
that's
so
crazy.
And so they get divorced. I mean, it used to be unheard of that people that were over the age of 50. I mean, it was unbelievably
rare. Once you get to that point,
that's exactly
no
right.
Looking back.
Yeah, I mean, they've been married. Most of them have been married 25,
yeah.
30 years at this
deal.
Point. But now it's the fastest growing group of divorcees. That's unbelievable.
That is unbelievable. Well, you actually do in a marriage conference. You do a session called "How Self Esteem Is Hurting Your Kids and Killing Your Marriage."
That's right.
And I would imagine most people are going, okay, yeah, I get it.
yeah, most of them, as a result of that session, I can't tell you how many married couples come up to me after that session and go, everything that you just said is what we've been living but couldn't put our finger on.
Wow.
You know, like we see the difference that it's making in our kids. We see the fact that they're not stepping up to the plate and taking responsibility because we're taking more responsibility for them. And by the way, as a result of that, our relationship is crumbling because, again, all of our time, all of our resources, all of our attention, they're directed, you know, down.
Yeah.
They're directed vertically, you know, down to our kids as opposed to horizontally to our spouse.
Yeah, which is not God's design in the first place.
That's exactly right.
First relationship with the Lord, second relationship with your spouse if you're married, and then to your kids and then everybody else. I mean, there is a God-given process there and a plan that we're supposed to be following.
You know, parents just don't want to face the reality that parenting relationship is a temporary relationship. I mean, one day our kids are going to leave our home. I mean, you think about, Steve, the magnitude of the fact that in Genesis 2:24, when God's word says, a man will leave his father and mother, join into his wife, cleave into his wife, and the two will be one flesh. That statement was made when Adam and Eve, they had no parents.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was an instruction given specifically to them to let them know, hey, your kids, you're going to have to let them go.
Yeah, yeah.
But what we see now is, man, parents, when their kids leave home, they're devastated.
Yeah.
I don't mean like just a little sad. I mean like depressed, got to get on medication, can't get out of bed, my life is over, I don't know what I'm going to do.
You actually see that.
Oh, yeah. I see it in counseling all the time.
Wow.
All the time. I mean, that's not anecdotal, like, yeah. You know, hey, maybe that. Like, I watch families go through that.
So what are some signs that we might, in fact, ourselves have a kid-centered house?
I think if you find yourself doing things for your kids that they should be doing for themselves on a consistent basis, and I don't mean not just occasionally, I mean like you just kind of live in fear of my kid's going to miss out, life's going to pass them by, they're not going to be successful, and so like I have to be everything for them, that's a really, really bad sign. Like homework, making up their bed, doing the dishes, taking out the trash, doing the laundry. All of those are routine things that we frequently have to remind our kids of.
Sure.
But when we get to that place where it's all about us making sure that we do those things, that's going to be problematic. Or you find yourself in a scenario where you just don't do a lot of teaching or discipling of your kids, where it's basically affection, 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 but never any boundaries, never any rules, never any expectations, never any consequences.
So if I'm my kid's friend,
yeah,
they'll listen to me and everything will go well.
No, I think you could be friendly with your kid, but my role as a parent is as a parent, not as a friend.
Yeah, which means there's going to be friction.
Yeah.
And there's going to be disappointment.
That's
and
right.
There'll even be some anger.
That's right.
And I think sometimes, I don't know anybody that's ever kind of claimed Romans 12:18 in terms of why they kind of have a hands-off approach with their kids. I could see how we would twist scripture because we're good at that. Go, oh, they're supposed to live at peace with everyone. But when we seek peace and pursue it, which I think is Psalm 34, is it wrong to desire peace in your home?
It's not wrong to desire peace in your home. It's just wrong to desire peace in your home at the expense of us taking the responsibility that we have as parents to step in and disciple our kids. Yeah. I mean, the scripture says foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child, but punishment will basically drive it
from him.
That'll
drive it from him.
I mean, you know, and so if we don't do that, I'll say this probably multiple times during our show today, but it's an unloving thing to do for us to abdicate our responsibility as parents at the expense of wanting the affection of our kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Or just peace in the home.
Right, or just peace in the home.
Yeah.
Because you think that it's a loving thing to do, and I'm taking it easy on them, and I'll show them grace and mercy because that's what the Lord shows, and that way they'll come around. But we're also dealing with young people. And we could be talking about 3, 4, 5, 6-year-olds, not just teenagers.
That's right.
This is whole scope of ages that it can be a real problem.
And by the way, Steve, that doesn't mean that we can't – that doesn't mean that there's never appropriate times for us to show them grace. But you and I both know theologically – You don't appreciate grace unless you understand the law.
No, that's right.
Right?
Well, that's the whole purpose of the law being there.
That's exactly right. And so frequently I give my boys grace. I mean, frequently, you know, I'll hey man, it's all good, you know. I mean, I'll overlook that. Everything doesn't have to be a monumentally big deal,
sure,
right? I mean,
sure.
I think we use wisdom in that. But where most parents are is nothing is a big deal.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like every they get to skate on everything. And you know, there's this term in psychology. It's called intermittent reinforcement. And intermittent reinforcement is when, you know, people don't know when they're going to be rewarded for something and when they're not. It's basically what a slot machine is. And when we parent that way,
oh man,
it's disastrous for our kids. Absolutely disastrous.
Which always reminds me not to drive our kids into frustration.
That's right.
Dads, don't anger your kids, provoking them to anger. How do you provoke your kid to anger? Change the rules all the time.
That's right.
You're in a bad mood, you enforce everything. You don't want to deal with it, you enforce nothing, and you provoke your kids to anger, which is a sin. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. It is Theology Thursday with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. We're here with Dr. Tate Cockrell, who teaches counseling here and has been in private practice for a long time and does conferences, all kinds of stuff, and he's been a blessing, not only here on the show, but to our family, just a lot of wisdom and great biblical counselor. So today, talking about is the kind of the center of your world, it's your children and your home. And that could be that you do everything for them, you go out of your way to make sure they feel great, you're pumping up their self-esteem, you're awesome, you're so special, everything's about them, you make sure you smooth out everything, you help them with their homework, and all those things. And it could be that you just take it easy on them. You never discipline your children. You kind of look over things and you try to be their friends, try to be their buddy, hoping that your overabundance of grace and mercy will then turn around and create a child in your home that's like, oh, mom, oh, dad, you're so nice to me. You're so loving. All my friends get in trouble, but I never get in trouble. And because of that, well, gosh darn it, I'm just going to follow you everywhere and do everything you ask me to do. And boy, this is just awesome. Which that sounds ridiculous, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sounds ridiculous because it is ridiculous.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, it sounds ridiculous because it is ridiculous. You know, the scripture says, Steve, in Hebrews 12, for the Lord disciplines those whom he loves.
Whom he loves.
Right? And so it's a loving thing to do to discipline our kids. And by and large, I know as an adult, and we were talking about the prefrontal cortex not being developed like in kids and teenagers. My frontal cortex is developed, and I don't always do the right thing. And how the Lord gets my attention is he disciplines me, right? And so if I'm going to learn that way as an adult, then we ought to expect the same thing, you know, of our kids.
Well, we talked about this earlier. I want to make sure. I don't know if we did it on the air yet. Talking about kind of enabling the whole notion of loving or unloving. And it feels like, I mean, I even get this. I'm like, if I take it easy on my kids, if I do the thing for them, if I take care of their, finish their laundry and they don't, if I put their dishes away and they don't, I feel like I'm being this really loving, kind, nice, gentle person. But what I'm actually doing could be unloving because I'm kind of enabling.
That's exactly right.
A lack of responsibility and a me-centered life.
You know, at the end of the day, Steve, anything you do for your kids, and we're talking about long term. We're not talking about an isolated incident. But long term, anything that you do for your kids that they can do for themselves, ultimately it hurts them. I mean, they'll never learn to do it. They don't just wake up one day and say, oh, I'm just going to randomly start doing this if we don't raise the bar of expectation. And so if I continue to do that for my child, then at the end of the day, they're never going to learn to step up to the plate.
And then what about, And my wife was asking this earlier on Facebook Live. If people have done Growing Kids God's Way, which is the Ezzos, then it's like spanking is a big deal. You do it all the time, and it's a regular part of raising them. And so what about that? Just kind of that iron fist.
Yeah, so
approach.
I mean, I'm certainly not opposed to spanking. I don't like it when spanking is the primary method of discipline in the home. I don't find that especially after a certain age, that it's just really not that helpful.
You want to give us a number?
And I would say you probably ought to stop spanking your kids whenever they enter pre-adolescence. So 10 or 11 years old.
11.
Yeah,
okay.
10 or 11 years old, you probably ought to move on to something else. Because in the early years, you need them to associate pain with the undesirable behavior, and they're not going to understand the rationalization of a conversation in that. So
yeah.
They understand the swat to the backside. They pair the unwanted behavior with the unpleasant experience. But once they get old enough that they can start processing that type of information, it's time to start discipling them. Discipline, that root word, disciple, teaching them, admonishing them, encouraging them. It's time for us to start including, you know, more aspects in there.
So not eliminating consequences.
Yeah. It's not a, well, we're not going to do anything.
Right.
It's, to be honest with you, in many respects, I wish I could spank my 16-year-olds. You know what I'm saying? It would be a lot easier.
Yes, Tate. I know what you're saying.
It would be a lot. You know, one of my 16-year-olds is a 245 defensive right tackle.
Yeah,
so
good luck with that.
Yeah. So I don't dare venture into that world. But it would be so much easier if I could just spank them instead of having to take the time to have conversations and teach and love and encourage and exhort and do all of those things. It would be so much easier if we could just spank, but it doesn't work. It doesn't work long term.
Well, that's where we have to be careful, where we go from one end of the spectrum.
That's right.
We typically, this is like, as a northerner, when we move down here, I always make fun of you southerners when the weather's bad or when we get some snow because you overcorrect like crazy. And so you're sliding off the right side of the road. Well, it's just a matter of time before I see you stranded on the left side of the road.
Right.
Don't we kind of do that in parenting as well? I mean, we can go from, all right, I'm not gonna raise a snowflake. I'm going to be really tough. But then you're like totally overbearing, because
that's right.
I can tell you what happens, because I'm a pretty overbearing father myself. I was raised by a really strong father. And so what happens is I think it shuts down that middle ground.
That's right. This
is what I've seen. And then if you're too harsh in your discipline, then conversation becomes almost impossible.
Yeah.
Because it's just frustration and kind of anger all the time.
I completely agree. And we, you know, it goes back to that thing we were talking about earlier about being your child's friend. I want to be my boy's friend. I want them to be friendly toward me.
Sure.
I want to be friendly toward them.
You want to have a good relationship.
I want to have a good, strong relationship. I don't want them to fear me in a way that, like, oh my gosh, dad is coming, like we need to go hide,
kind of a thing. Right.
But I do think that they ought to have a healthy fear or respect of my authority. And the only way they're going to have that is, along with being their friend, is if I am the authority figure in their life.
Yeah.
And the authority figure is the one who enforces the rules.
Yeah, what a great point. I'm taking some questions on Facebook Live, but if you're listening and want to call in, I usually don't do this on Theology Thursday, but I think this is such a big challenge for so many of us, myself included. I think this is a rampant problem, whether it's the body of Christ or not. But if you have any questions for Tate, if you just want to ask something about this topic today as we look at a home that's really centered around the kids or centered around the children, just give us a call, 866-348-7884. We'll try to get to as many of those as we can. 866-348-7884 is the number, or 866-34-TRUTH if you want to ask a question about this kind of child-centered parenting. Maybe what's the balance? How do you come out of it? So let me ask you this question, because I think us adults who are listening mostly need to hear it. How does this manifest itself in our children, in our teenagers, in our young 20s, whatever? Because you're counseling some of them.
Yeah, well, what ends up happening is they end up becoming really, really anxious oftentimes. Like, we think we're being loving and, like, this is empowering them. And, you know, we want them to, oftentimes, you know, we want to encourage them so that, you know, they'll be independent. But at the end of the day, what's happening is anxiety is on the rise. 28% increase in anxiety among, like, 6 to 17-year-olds in the last 20 years. And I think that's directly attributable to, I was using the example earlier, like most behavioral experts, like they train animals and stuff, they'll say, if you just give affection like to a dog, but you don't ever discipline him or exercise him, he'll develop anxiety. He'll get anxiety as a result of that. And I think our kids are doing that. You think about this in a kid-centered home oftentimes too. Here's the other thing that happens. I'm deriving so much emotional satisfaction from what's going on in my kids' lives. Many parents, maybe they're living their unmet dreams and expectations through
vicariously
through their kids. All of a sudden, one day, a 10-year-old wakes up and realizes that his mom and dad's happiness is dependent on his ability to throw a ball or make a good grade.
Oh, man.
How? I mean, he's not been prepared to know how to take that type of pressure.
Yeah.
He's going to feel anxious as a result of that. And so when all this downward pressure is exerted on kids from the adults, they're going to get anxious. They're going to get depressed. They're going to get rebellious. They're going to do things that we don't want them to do.
Yeah, yeah. Such an important point. 866-348-7884 if you have a question for Dr. Tate Cockrell today about this whole notion of a home that really revolves around the happiness of the kids. 866-348-7884 or 866-34-TRUTH. I had another question on Facebook Live. I thought this was a pretty interesting question. At what age is discipline accepted? Meaning, you know, does a one-year-old really understand that? And then at what point are they, because there's childishness and there's foolishness.
Right.
Right. And we look at, I'm trying to remember the scripture. Is it childishness or foolishness that's bound up in the heart?
Foolishness.
Foolishness, yeah, foolishness. Bound up in, and you have to drive it away from them. So right. That's when they're making a conscious decision to do something right. Stupid versus childishness is they're just acting their age.
Right. Yeah. I think we need to start punishing our kids, disciplining our kids early, and it could be 1 year, 1 year of age, but that may be, Steve, just something as light as a tap on a hand.
Yeah, that's,
I'm not talking about, you know,
enough.
Yeah, I mean, not like just spanking them, but just again having them pair unwanted feelings with unwanted behavior, right? Kids, you know, they learn as a result of that. So you can start really, really early. We go through different phases of parenting, right? And so as we parent, we want to parent appropriate to the developmental age of the child. And so if all they understand is an unpleasant tap on the hand, then that's what we do.
Right.
If we can reason with them and have a conversation, then that's what we do.
All right, so let me go back to kind of the home environment. So I think a lot of parents, we struggle with if we're too hard on our kids, then we're going to drive a wedge in between us, and then we get nowhere. And then don't we have to assume that our kids are probably going to try to manipulate the whole system because they're all after all fallen individuals?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I absolutely believe that. I mean,
you make me feel horrible. You make me do this.
I think that in a relationship between a parent and a child, somebody has to be the adult. Okay. And the adolescent is going to act like an adolescent. And the adolescent is going to be manipulative and angry and rebellious at times. And they're going to be good at times as well. But it's our responsibility to step in during those times when they need instruction.
And you being super nice and doing all kinds of things for them and serving them is not going to change that reality.
It's not going to.
Such an important point. We're talking to Dr. Tate Cockrell today on the Steve Noble Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. It is Theology Thursday with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, talking to one of my good friends here and a great blessing on the show, Dr. Tate Cockrell, Associate Professor of Counseling here at Southeastern Baptist. And we're talking today about, Tate's been running into this a lot in marriage conferences, parenting conferences, and as a counselor over the last 2 decades plus. It's this whole notion of kind of a child-centered home, and this is some stuff he sent me in the email. Homes where self-esteem is elevated above everything else, and it's throwing the kids in the homes into a state of chaos. All the emotional energy, satisfaction, and resources for the family are funneled into children, and as a result, the marriage relationship is falling apart, and divorce among empty nesters is on the rise. And that stat was like over 100% growth.
Yeah.
In the last 20 years, right?
Yeah, 109% in the last 20 years.
Among people that are in their 50s,
right?
Which is now our kids are leaving the house.
That's right.
I'm 53. We've got a 14-year-old and an 18-year-old left in the house, so we're approaching that.
That's right.
And he did a recent talk in a marriage conference entitled How Self-Esteem is Hurting Your Kids and Killing Your Marriage. So I think most of us probably recognize when we kind of built this monster and built this machine and we have kind of a children-centered home and we're trying to do everything we can to keep them happy, to see that they succeed. Well, let me ask you that question right quick, and then I want to talk about how do we right the ship. If we created this monster, how do we get it back in the box, both for a two-parent home as well as for single parents? So we'll finish up with that. But a question I had before that was, just as we kind of go down this road with our children in the first place, how much of our time should spent correcting versus building up? Because we're not talking about you never build up your kids.
Yeah, no.
It's just sober-mindedness, I think.
I think we would have to do less correction if we would do more building up, if we would do more instruction, if we would spend more of the right kinds of time with our children.
Don't you have like a little formula about this? Negative things versus positive things?
Yeah, so basically we say that it basically takes seven positives to offset every one negative that you have with your child. So if you think about that, think about the last 24 hours with your child, how many negative things versus how many positive things, and many of us are operating at an incredible deficit.
Yeah, and I think most of the time it's one or the other.
Right.
You're either all negative and no positive, that's my problem.
That's right.
Or you're all positive and no negative, thinking that's how you're going to achieve peace and you're going to build them up and they're going to love you, therefore they're going to follow you. God gives us everything. Last time I checked, nobody is righteous. No, not one. Nobody seeks God. God has to initiate all that.
Yeah, oftentimes we tend to fall on one end of the spectrum or the other. We either tend to be the permissive parent
or
the authoritarian parent, right? And what we want to be is authoritative. You know,
we
want to be authoritative. We want to be that mom or that dad that loves and is affectionate and is close and wants to invest and wants to encourage, but is also willing to do the difficult thing and say, I want to instruct and I want to set good boundaries and, you know, I want to discipline you in a way that ultimately is going to be healthy. Chip Ingram said this one time in a book that I, or a conference I was at or a video that I was seeing, and it revolutionized the way I parent. He said, if your child never learns to obey the voice of a parent they can see, they'll never learn to obey the voice of a God they can't see.
Yeah, yeah.
And the first time I ever heard that, I thought, man, I need to be much more authoritative in my house. Not because it makes my life easier, but because it's going to impact their spiritual life going forward.
Forward, yeah.
You know, not just their grades or their ability to, you know, get a good job and, you know, do well in college, but, man, their spiritual walk with the Lord. If they don't understand the relationship of sowing and reaping and the relationship there between consequences and their actions, because I failed to teach that in my home, man, the ripple effect of that is horrendous.
And then and we're not going to go down this road, but that you could make a good case then for generational sin because
that's right.
We're creating that monster.
That's right.
So if we've done the child-centered home thing and it's all about our kids and now they're snowflakes, how do we right that ship? Let's talk about a two-parent home. Praise God if mom and dad are both there. And then we'll talk about single parents as well.
So for both of them, right off the bat, I would say if you're going to correct, the first thing you need to do is have a conversation with your kids. I think we need to take responsibility. If we've not done it right, let's not put that on our children. Let's take ownership of that and say, hey, I've not done well. I've prioritized the wrong things. I've been willing to invest time in athletics and academics and music and extracurricular activities, but I've not done a good job at shepherding your heart and discipling your soul. We want to do better. I think we have to start there.
Do we apologize and ask for forgiveness?
I would. I think you should. I think you should say, I'm sorry. Would you please forgive me for that? I think that's, you know, we say in parenting, you ought to be what you want your kids to become, right? Sometimes. If you want them to be humble and you want them to be teachable and moldable, then be humble and be teachable and be moldable and be willing to take responsibility when you need to take responsibility. I say this often, there's a difference between taking charge and taking responsibility. Mm. And many parents want to take charge of their children, but they don't want to take responsibility. So they get mad when their children don't do what they expect them to do, but they didn't take responsibility to instruct them and expect of them for them to do the right thing. And now they're frustrated as a result of that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we're quick to take ourselves out of that picture.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right. So that one, you have that conversation, take responsibility, got to own it, apologize, ask forgiveness, and then so you got to move from there.
So then if you're in a two-parent home, what I would say is one of the very first things you could do is take some of your attention and affection and redirect that away from your children and redirect it towards your spouse. Because in a two-parent home, if they are a kid-centric home, it is likely already having really negative effects in their marriage. And so you can start by doing the right thing in your marriage by loving each other well. Interesting study several years ago, children respond better to the marriage education of their parents than they do the parent education of their parents.
Wow.
In other words, my kids are more positively impacted when I work on my marriage relationship than someone teaches me how to be a better parent.
That's amazing.
That is a pretty amazing thing. Yeah. And so redirect some of that attention and affection toward toward your marriage. Number three, I would say take the time to do intentional discipleship with your children. And you could do that whether you're in a married home or in a single home. Take time to do instruction with your kids. Morality, ethics, life principles, the scriptures, praying with them, begin to do some investment. We will oftentimes, we'll get out in the backyard, we'll throw the ball with them, we'll get out in the driveway, we'll shoot hoops with them, we'll, take them to dance lessons, we'll do all of that. Do we read the scriptures to them?
Yeah.
Do we talk about their spiritual lives with them? Do we pray with them?
Yeah, sit down engagement.
Sit down and engage with them in the right areas.
Back to that initial conversation. Is that when we say, this is kind of, there's a new sheriff in town, and there's some new rules, and this is the way it's going to work?
What I would do is I would make the apology portion of that very front and center at the beginning, and then once all of that's done, then I do think in that same conversation you have to say there is going to be some pretty massive changes that are going to be made around here, and you're going to feel them, and at times you're not going to like them, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with the fact that you're not going to like them.
Should we have several things that we know are going to change?
Yes.
Tangible things and get that
on
the table.
Yeah, I mean, if you already know the things that you know you need to change, time with them, time with spouse, having them take responsibility of things like schoolwork and those sorts of things. I mean, you need to be prepared to not only say what the expectation is, but to also say what the consequence is going to be if the expectation is not met.
And then when we're kind of helicopter parenting and helping our kids with their homework or plain old doing your child's project.
Yeah.
Don't we need to be willing to let them fail?
You absolutely need to be willing to let them fail. Better that they fail when they're within the guardrails of your home than failing out there when the consequences are much, much, much higher.
Yeah.
And oftentimes they're not going to learn until they experience the pain of failure.
Is this a lot more challenging for a single parent?
I think it is a lot more challenging for a single parent because you're not splitting the load between two parents in terms of, the ability to share resources and oftentimes what we see in a single parent home, because some of their emotional needs are not being met by a spouse, some of their emotional needs are being supplanted by their relationship with their kids. So we see really, really strong bonds between single parents and their children. And I think that's good. I think it's good that they have that really strong bond. But if they're not careful, a lot of single parents end up being their child's friend because they don't have that spousal friend in the home,
right,
and so their child ends up becoming that. And so that's a really, really hard thing to break free from for some single parents.
And that's where the church has got to do a better job of coming alongside single parents.
That's exactly right.
And be a father to the fatherless or be a mother to the motherless.
That is exactly right. That's exactly where the church can step in and say, we're going to provide some mentors, we're going to provide some relationships with some dads. It can be dads and moms. They can be moms because the mom or dad isn't in the home.
Yeah. What about, I think, do a lot of parents slip into the good cop, bad cop? You be the enforcer, I'll be the lover.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and unfortunately what happens is the enforcer, trying to compensate for the affection of the more permissible parent gets more strict, and the stricter the strict parent becomes, the more affectionate the affectionate parent becomes, and the gap just gets, wider and wider. And then because, like you and I talked about earlier, Steve, because kids are kids and they're broken and fallen and they're really, really manipulative, then they know how to work the system. They know the gap, and they know who to approach.
Yeah, we complain about judicial activism. And then we set up the exact same system in our home. Judge shopping.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So I'm going to go parent shopping.
Yeah.
And on this particular subject, I'm going to talk to mom, not dad, or vice versa.
One of my boys asked me the other day, he asked me if he could do something. And I said, yeah, let me go talk to your mom about it and, just see what she thinks. And he was like, why do you always have to get mom's permission? And I said, I don't have to get mom's permission, but we parent as a unit. And so if you would have gone and asked her first, she would have said the same thing. And I said, by the way, you probably didn't go ask her first because maybe you already know what she was going to say.
Yeah, that's a nice try, Bucko.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That's one of those kind of moments that's so good. Tate, as always, so great to have you on here. One of our Facebook Live friends, this is a request, so let's make sure we get you scheduled for another show. He said, could there be a part two to this topic? What about young adult children? I think that's something. What age would you say when we kind of transition to parenting young adults?
Yeah, 17.
17, 18.
Yep, 17, 18.
I can, wait, listen, could you hear that? I hear all the groaning out there across the country as we bring up that subject. So we'll make sure we get that scheduled. We'll do that again. That's a great one. Thanks for that, Will, to bring that up. What a great point. This is Steve Noble. Tate, thanks for being here today, buddy. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks always, Steve.
And friends, this is Steve Noble. It's the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always said, ever forward.